Hello, sports fans. This is Zach Newton coming to you live from the Perry Fieldhouse at Bowling Green State University. We've got some national championship dodgeball action going for you today. The game I'm trying to watch through the nets, Western Wisconsin Platteville. These opaque nets making it a challenge to analyze the game. Plus, can't really see anything either. So, also in front of me, we've got what looks like DePaul and Miami of Ohio. Miami, a significantly depleted program, trying to make something happen this season. Looks like Platteville moving up. Kind of a much ado about nothing sort of festivity so far. Not a lot happening in this one. Waiting on Alex Bomas to join me in the booth. Actually, don't know where in... Oh, there he is, Alex Bomas. Hey, we've already started.
Oh, we have, haven't we? So yes, I guess I can't do my intro read. All right, then, sure.
Well, I mean, you know, I tried to set it up as best I could. Yeah, the opaque net's making it a challenge to call court one. So we can watch this Miami-DePaul game. Should be an interesting one.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Let me get my liner notes out first.
Oh, you brought notes. Bomas bought notes, everybody. I wore a blazer today. Bomas has notes. Could be the most legitimate, probably the most legitimate episode of the podcast that will ever be released by the folks here at Average Joe's. This is an early episode, so if you want to go through, we can discuss various things while the game's going on. Like I said, not much still happening over on court one.
Well, let's start out with the simple fact of the matter that over the current 36 hours, you're going to see 32 games of dodgeball. We've got 260 players here. People are going to be tired by the end of this thing.
It's a lot of dodgeball. A lot of dodgeball. You can play three games today, like three full games. So that's a lot more dodgeball you've ever had to play in one sitting.
Absolutely. And this is going to be a tournament where teams that know how to catch and not waste their arms in the preliminaries are likely to make a run. Teams like Ohio State, every last one of them knows how to make ridiculously athletic catches. Meanwhile, you have teams like Grand Valley, teams like Saginaw Valley. They are offense personified. However, with the court structure that we've got here, the nets that are set up will stop anything from becoming a rebound. They're going to stop dead in their tracks, fall flat, and that offensive advantage for them is going to get eliminated for them early. And later, when their arms are tired, they're just going to lose their throwing power, and that's when teams like Ohio State will come to play.
It's going to be an interesting tournament to see how strategy plays out. Game on court two still has not started yet. The Western game, I can't quite tell. Looks like Western has a few-man advantage over Platteville. I believe they're the Pioneers. I said the Platypi on the last podcast, and apparently that is incorrect. There's a little raccoon. I think it has a gun on their jerseys. They've got nice uniforms. Very nice Adidas kits for the Platteville kids.
Yeah, as long as we're talking about some of the other games today, let's just run through the teams north to south and just sort of talk about where they are, where they stand in this thing. Starting very top, you have Central Michigan. Now, they are a textbook case of just how quickly a team can rise to prominence in the National College Dodgeball Association. A few short years ago, they were just happy to be here. Now, not only are they winning tournaments, not only are they taking home hardware, they're beating teams like Grand Valley State, a group that hasn't lost since April of 2006.
Yeah, they are really something else. They are, I guess you could kind of liken them to like the Memphis Tigers under John Calipari, where they were just an average, you know, middle-of-the-road, mid-major team that all of a sudden was playing in, you know, national championship games. I think these guys could be I wouldn't call them a sleeper team, because they're immensely talented, but I think they could be one of the teams that doesn't have Valley or State in their names that can win a national title this year.
That's very true. However, I would disagree with you on the comparison to Memphis. Memphis just has or had a ridiculous amount of talent. Central, they don't necessarily have the most talent. I mean, they are competent. They are athletic. But what really makes them shine is their ability to work together, that crucial teamwork that you need to have happen in order to have lucky breaks go your way.
Oh, I concur. Very well-bonded team from Central Michigan. So moving on to Saginaw Valley, Bomas, what you got for them?
Well, as I said earlier, I mean, they're aggression personified. Every last player of them throws and throws hard. One player of note would definitely be Spencer Jardine, I believe number 77. The fact of the matter is you don't want to be on the receiving end of anything thrown by him. They rely almost exclusively on arm strength. So late in the tournament, you're possibly going to see them tire out. And with as many as eight games to play, the big question is whether they're going to be able to last.
Yeah, that endurance is a big, big factor in this. It's not a sprint at all. You know, there's no breaks. It's a national tournament, but there's no breaks between games. You might get an hour off here and there. when your team doesn't have to play, but that's all the break you're going to get, and you're going to have to play three full games today. So a team that focuses predominantly on throwing could struggle, especially late in the out rounds of this tournament.
Yeah, I definitely say so. And as long as we're talking about offensive teams, you really can't have discussion about them or about contenders without discussing the Grand Valley State Lakers. The fact of the matter is, dynasty is not a word that would be odd to associate with them. I mean, listen to the number of losses they've had since 2005. Lost to Ohio State in April of 2005. They lost to Ohio State in April 2006. They lost to Central Michigan in March of 2010. That's the list, folks. That is all they've lost since being formed basically on Super Bowl Sunday of 2005. Perhaps the only thing this team doesn't do well is play from behind, but the fact of the matter that they do it so rarely, they're really not used to it. They're not used to playing from behind because they're not used to losing.
You know, it's a situation that you have to have game experience in. You can't put your team behind in practice and expect them to play as hard as you have to come back and rally and win a game. Folks, I don't know if you can hear over Boneless's analysis, the DePaul boys on the opposite end of court two just broke into the infamous Baby Shark chant. Yes, it's the one that you used to hear in church camp when you were good little kids instead of dodgeball players. And it's one of the DePaul traditions, one of the many interesting traditions in dodgeball. But certainly one that needs to be discussed if you're going to talk about a dodgeball tournament, especially at the national level.
Moving on in our tournament discussion so far, we of course have my favorite team, the Michigan State Spartans. Have some talent, definitely has some numbers in the underclassmen ranks, so they'll be around for a while without much of a loss in the way of graduation. They have a tendency, however, to play to the level of their competition. They play very well against Grand Valley, but against some of the lesser teams, they just do not bring their A game. And above all, their big struggle is closing out points. They can knock you down to 5, 4, 3 players. Problem is, when they try and get down to that last one, and finally knock them out, they just seem to have a difficulty with queuing up on that last guy, making a quick throw, and eliminating them. They allow teams to hang around far more often than they should.
Yeah, it's that's something I think that comes with
Why is this not working?
That's a good question.
Why is this clock?
The clock is exploding here, folks. So we are really confused as to why it's not running. The game is on. The clock is not running, but anyway, there's really only so much we can do about that. But yeah, I think that's one of those things that come with senior experience. Closing out games, having the killer instinct, mm-hmm. is something that comes with experience. And like you said, there's a young group of kids. I think they'll really pick that up as they get older.
Moving on to Wisconsin-Platteville, the fact of the matter is they're a relative unknown. They have not played the season. Going based off their performance from 2009, they did show signs of progress in terms of developing fundamentals. The big question is whether they're going to do well this year. And judging by the current game of Western Kentucky versus Wisconsin-Platteville, they seem to be holding their own right now. I'm counting roughly 10 players to 6 in favor of the Hilltoppers, but this is definitely an improvement over last year's outing for them.
Yeah, and they're playing, this is a really tough game to open up against, because Western, I don't necessarily think that they are in complete, they're completely deserving of their number two ranking, but, going up against the number two team in the country, first game out at the national tournament is not an easy feat. And I believe Luke Gillum just scored a pretty big kill. Looks like the Hilltoppers have got it down to maybe two or three Pioneers over there, but yeah. It's one of those things, you can't, your first year, you're going to struggle at least a wee bit.
That's not it. Moving on to Eastern Michigan University, we have another first-year team here, very eager to get into the mix. They do have a couple of throwers, but their teamwork needs to be developed. I've seen them in a couple outings so far this year, and this is just typical of new and developing teams. It's nothing personal against the Eastern Michigan Eagles. They just need to start learning how to coordinate better and not leave their teammates out to dry. They're looking for that true first win. Their official standing does give them one win. However, that was by a BGSU forfeit earlier in the season.
Like you said, I haven't seen anything from these Eastern Michigan kids. Cutting into live action, Western just pick up what I believe is the first point of the NCAA dodgeball tournament, although it looks like DePaul is about to pick up the second. Both those teams, DePaul and Western, going up 1-0 in their first pool play game.
About 15 minutes and 35 seconds left in the first half. Western Kentucky up on Wisconsin-Platteville, 1-0. Speaking of action right in front of us, you really can't have a discussion about entertainment without the DePaul Blue Demons. An unofficial title would be the court jesters of the NCAA. Their play style, simple. If it's not fun, they won't do it.
But at the same time, looking at the way they're performing, and this is a depleted Miami program, but at the same time, they are certainly bringing it in this one. Yeah, they're having fun, but they are having fun in what seems to be a pretty effective manner so far, taking an early 1-0 lead.
Well, enthusiasm definitely seems to be true on both sides. Speaking of which, Captain Jack Young seems extremely enthusiastic about this year's tournament. He's citing team speed as key to his success this year. He really thinks they have a shot to make a run.
Yeah, we're about to see an opening rush, and that was one of the things he's been talking about, is just how effective their team is off that starting line. You know, so that speed can come in very handy, especially over the full 2-day course of the tournament.
Quite correct. Again, you have 3 games guaranteed, 4th once you hit Sunday, and from there, plenty to go home. It will be very interesting to see how long these teams keep their relative advantages. I still think Ohio State has the decisive edge because they just have to stand there and let the ball come to them, as opposed to someone who has to run fast, throw fast, or other things of that nature. Moving on to some of the southern schools, Bowling Green State has got a phenomenal facility here, and they seem very capable of possibly pulling an upset or two. They have a number of capable players, including a couple who can catch, a couple on special teams, but they need to work on their fundamentals. They've typically played fairly disorganized, and above all, they need to avoid the early knockout punch that a lot of developing teams suffer. They get hit 1-0, 2-0, and then it just all falls apart from there.
Yeah, you know, it's one thing in dodgeball to come down from being behind 1 point, maybe 2 points, but if you get down 3 or more, it's a tough, because, you know, points are long. You can't really speed through your offense to conserve time like you can in basketball or football. So it's one of those, it's a game where you have to stay competitive the entire game in order to have a shot to win at the end of it.
Right, and a lot of times if you're a new developing team, you might want to focus more on your defensive abilities more than your offensive, because odds are you're playing a competent team who knows how to block, who knows how to get out of the way. If you're just going to give up your balls like that, lose your offensive firepower, you're going to be in trouble quick. So working on your defensive skill set, working on catching balls, even if it doesn't result in wins immediately for you, is a long-term path to success.
Yeah, you got to, it's like they say, the old adage, very simple, offense wins games, defense wins championships.
Quite correct, Zach.
You know, and that's something, you know, we talked about it applying at the tournament. That's how it applies to building a team. If you can't play defense, you can't make catches, you're going to struggle.
Yep. Moving on to the newest team in the National College Dodgeball Association, you have Western Illinois. Gave Saginaw Valley State a scare last month, but were held off. Other schools are actively waiting and watching to see what these guys have got.
You know, all I can tell you about them is I really like the purple jerseys. It's a bold statement. You know, sends a pretty confident message.
Well, purple is the color of royalty. We will see if they will be crowned kings at the end of Sunday.
Indeed we will.
Moving on to Kent State. Similar to Bowling Green in terms of talent, but as opposed to being more focused on catching, more focused on special teams, they tend to have more offensive firepower. One thing that may work to their disadvantage is they don't play with this typical 8.5-inch playground ball by Champion Sports. Their playground ball that they use tends to have a thinner skin and is able to be gripped, to be thrown, to be spun a lot more effectively. They will converge on you, however, if you do overreach and you have a couple guys in isolation near them.
Yeah, they seem like I haven't really seen any of them around, actually. Maybe it's just because we are down on one end of the Perry Fieldhouse complex. Big complex here, really. 4 basketball courts in the middle of the track. Really nice setup for this tournament. But I haven't seen any of the Kent State Golden Flashes, but I'm sure they're running around here somewhere.
Undoubtedly. Speaking of Ohio teams, you really can't have a discussion about them without talking about one of my favorite teams, the Ohio State Buckeyes. These guys are deceptively good. And special teams, the ability to catch, can change momentum of a game very quickly, and this is one skill set that virtually every Ohio State player does very well. In addition to that, they are not afraid to charge right up at the line, pump fake, regardless of whether they have a ball or not. Frankly, it unnerves teams just to see someone charging down at them. To see that throwing motion will really bug a couple of players and probably prevent a couple of hits that should take place. And just to have a little bit of variety, they do have a couple of very strong arms. So being on the receiving end of one of those pump fakes will eventually,
eventually there's going to be a ball attached and it's going to come flying.
And it'll be very unfortunate. Moving on to one of the last teams, we've got Miami, Ohio, has struggled with recruiting each of the past few years, but what players there are not necessarily that bad.
Yeah, it seems like they've got some raw talent, but there's no molding process, and there's not a big, it seems like, effort to build with this team. It seems like they kind of stagnate. And where they are right now, they've got, like I said, they've got a good foundation. They've just got to build upon it.
Well, the fact of the matter is that there are two aspects to running a good dodgeball organization. One, getting good players, teaching them the skill sets. And the other, almost more important facet, is the ability to recruit. Grand Valley State came out of nowhere by starting off with about 80 members. Michigan State had a solid year or two of around 60 or 70. Ohio State has typically had very large numbers. It's those larger groups that are going to have a greater talent pool to select from, and a greater talent pool will lead to more games down the road. But let's talk about your favorite team, the Western Kentucky University Hilltoppers.
Well, what I'll tell you is that today they're offensively, at least here at the start, they are a depleted team. They're missing two of their best offensive players in Matt Parsons and Zach Byrne. Byrne had some scheduling conflicts and could not make it up this weekend. Parsons will be here tomorrow. He had a test late last night in his night class or something or other, so he could not make it. But he will be here tomorrow. So for out rounds, Western will have Matt Parsons back. But right now, their pool play games, they are playing depleted.
Yeah, I took a look at their stat line, their roster sheet in the nights before the tournament. Seems like they really focus on offensive skill set more than anything else.
They've got a few big arms. They certainly do. And not having probably what I would say the two biggest could hurt them. But they've still got you got Daniel Williams who tore his ACL, spent a semester in England, now back. He's got a pretty big arm, but he's a little rusty. He hasn't practiced in almost a month, he told me before the game. We've got Nick Nyman, a couple other guys that can throw, that can make some plays. Adam Martin, the face-painted one. He's got the Braveheart V happening. If you see a picture from the tournament, that'd be Adam. He certainly is one of the more intimidating blockers in the league. He's just fearless.
Well, now that we've discussed all the teams here in Bowling Green, Ohio, let's talk quickly about the tourney format, if you will. Three pool games based on win losses. That sets up your seeding for Sunday. Points fielded minus points allowed is your tiebreaker. Win till you go home, and the top place finish will end up with that beautiful foot tall trophy.
I haven't seen the trophy. I didn't even know we had a trophy, to be honest with you.
Saginaw Valley State brought it in earlier today. It still looks to be in good condition. Hopefully some team from the great state of Michigan will be able to put their name on one of those mini plaques by the time this is said and done.
Well, we'll see how that goes.
That's true.
But
speaking of predictions, who do you have as your number one seed going into Sunday?
Number one seed going into Sunday, it's a matter of strategy. It depends on how many teams actually go and play hard all three of their pool play games today. Because, a team might win a pool play game, get a decent seed, and then lay up. Try to save their arms, just have catching practice, if you will. Seeding for tomorrow is almost a crapshoot. I think your Michigan teams, Grand Valley, your Saginaw, and maybe Central Michigan, I think they'll go hard all three games. So that'll be interesting to see if they actually play hard all three of their pool play games in order to get a top seed, maybe a bye tomorrow morning.
Quit waffling. Give me a decision.
Oh, now there you go. I'm going to take Central Michigan.
Any particular reason behind it, or just picking randomly out of the three?
Well, out of the three, I'm going to pick randomly. I think Grand Valley and Saginaw Valley have experience not to throw their arms out in the first day. And I think that even though they rely on their arms, they know that they've got to have them tomorrow if they want to win a championship.
Well, I think I'm going to have to disagree with you on top seed. I'm going to have to go with the Saginaw Valley State Cardinals for the reason of the competition that they have to play. I believe that they're playing Western Illinois, they're playing Bowling Green, they're not playing Western Illinois. They're playing Bowling Green, Kent State, and Eastern Michigan. Fact of the matter is, the combined schedule of Saginaw Valley's opponents is, I believe, 1-10, and that one is a BGSU forfeit to Eastern Michigan. So the fact of the matter is, Saginaw Valley State, very fortunate with the scheduling going on Saturday. I don't see a reason they don't get into the top seed when walking away.
Yeah, knowing that, and like I said, I'm not nearly as well as prepared as I ought to be. But, it seems to me like when you look at the pools, and that Saginaw Valley's pool, and then you look at what I guess could be compared to, what they call the World Cup, the pool of death every year, you've got Michigan State, Grand Valley, Western in one pool. You know, so that's where teams are gonna, you know, it's gonna be a struggle almost, you know, to kind of eke out a win. I mean, you've got Wisconsin Platteville, who's an unknown, but right now they're in a 1-1 tie with a little over 7.5 left with Western. You know, so they're clearly no slouch.
That is true. Well, we've talked about top seeds. Let's talk about possible upsets. Who do you see as doing the improbable, pulling off a win against a team that you really don't expect to lose?
You know, I could really see I could see Western Illinois pulling off one of those upsets. They're a new team, but you know, that's the thing. That's an advantage. You know, when you're a new team, a young team, and nobody really knows you. They haven't scouted you. You know, you don't have any high profile players yet because nobody's, you know, there's no profile that's been developed. So it seems to me like they've got kind of an advantage, whereas they know who they've got to look out for in their opponents. Nobody's heard anything about them.
That's true. I think that my upset, and I've discussed this at length with some others, is going to have to be DePaul University versus Ohio State. I just have a feeling that Jack Young's enthusiasm and his team speed is going to be able to do some damage later today against the Ohio State Buckeyes. Speaking of which, let's briefly go into the coverage that we'll be going into in detail. Basically, we're going to do 3 games today, and then as many as we can handle on Sunday until one of our voices gives out. But for now, the schedule is going to be DePaul, Ohio State University, followed by Central Michigan versus Miami of Ohio, and then we're going to end with a couple of really powerhouse teams, Grand Valley State University versus the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers.
Should prove to be a very effective sort of game of the night, if you will. Friday night dodgeball, game of the week sort of environment around that one, I think. The number one and number two teams in the nation. Interesting that they're in the same pool.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, you know, scheduling a 13-team tournament is always exceedingly difficult, especially when you have a number of dominant teams in one area of the country, another number of dominant teams in another area of the country. The fact of the matter is, even though there are a lot fewer teams than, say, the NCAA basketball tournament, putting this thing together is a pain.
You know, I certainly can imagine that. And I believe, and I'm not sure, I don't know, do they discuss this in the captain's meeting, where we'll be next year?
No, they have not discussed that yet. That probably will be discussed after the 5th round of games. And hopefully, once this is all said and done, I'd like to see it go right back to Bowling Green State University. Fact of the matter is, their facility is phenomenally built for this.
It's a great facility, I will admit. You know, I know that Western, the Hilltoppers are hoping to host it in the next couple of years. You know, and I'd say this facility certainly rivals my own Preston Center. And you can accuse me of favoritism; that's perfectly acceptable.
Well, I can't really do much of that because I have never seen the Western Kentucky facility. But if it's anything like Perry Fieldhouse in Bowling Green, Ohio, the fact of the matter is you've got a pretty good case to be made.
Yeah,
I'm going to go check scores of the other games and come back in a few minutes.
All right, so we'll have Bowman's back in a minute. While he's gone, I'll give you a rundown of what's going on in front of me. We've got some scoreboard difficulties here at the DePaul-Miami game. I believe DePaul is up by kind of 3-0, but don't quote me on that. Over at the Western game on court one, there's 4.5 left in the first, and it's tied 1-1 in the third point. They're just kickballs. It's not that bad. But we got a new scoreboard rolled in. DePaul player just made a catch on the way down, popped a squat Indian style, and made the grab. And he's rocking some Harlem Globetrotter shorts. You know, this DePaul team really showing us something. They're looking for their first win in the national tournament. And they are certainly making a case for themselves here. Certainly playing fearless. Great teamwork and great catches by DePaul early on. This could be an asset to them this set. The way they're playing some awesome defense here. Oh, all the balls down here on Miami. Excellent spin by the player from Miami. And here comes the DePaul ace, and I can't see their jersey from here. What a catch. That's a two-man swing for Miami. And this one far from over, at least this point. If Miami wants to stay alive in this one, they're gonna have to turn this around real quick. Another catch, I believe, by the Red Hawks. Another catch and a hit. This one's swinging very rapidly in favor of Miami. It's like point three still raging over here for the Hilltoppers. What you got for me, Bomas?
Well, part of my prediction rang true. Kent State is now losing to Saginaw Valley State 4-0. They just went up. About 9 minutes left in the first half. Meanwhile, you have Eastern Michigan trying to put an effort against the against Bowling Green State University. They are down 2-0 with 12 minutes left in the first.
Yeah. So wait, what was the second game? I missed it. I was lost in this DePaul game. It's really an excellent point being played here by the Miami University Redhawks.
Eastern Michigan down to BGSU 2-0, 12 minutes left in the first.
This game in front of us, really an indication of just how important catching is. The Miami Redhawks down to one player and have swung this through catching, not through kills, through catching in their favor. They're now up 3-2 over the Blue Demons in the last the third or fourth point of this one.
And almost reeled in another one by 55 from Miami of Ohio. Unfortunately, rattles around his arms, falls off his chest. He's going down. You're down to two Miami of Ohio Red Eagles and two DePaul Blue Demons. Blue Demons throw, both miss.
It's a really impressive use of the simul throw, though. Certainly well-executed teamwork by the Blue Demons. Really fundamentally seem to have it together better than they have. You know, they're the court jesters of dodgeball, but this year they're really playing good fundamentals, especially in this game.
Well, Jack Young did say that he's really pleased with how his team has progressed. Usually they do not play by the standard NCAA rules at their own practices, but they've been changing that up in the past couple of weeks to adjust in time for the April tournament. In fact, the matter is it seems to be paying benefits right now.
Yeah, they are really reaping what they've sown by starting to rehearse the way they perform, if you will.
Yeah, moving over to court one, however, you have one Western Kentucky Hilltopper, number six, versus a plethora of Western Platteville players.
Yeah, this one, the Hilltoppers really not playing their best dodgeball right now. Seem to be struggling against Platteville. Maybe Platteville could be more of a sleeper than we had originally expected.
And Kyle Dahl from Bowling Green, Kentucky gets hit. Wisconsin Platteville goes up 2-0 with seconds.
2-1, I believe.
2-1 with seconds to play.
So I believe they will wipe this and add it to the second half because it looks like there are 10 seconds left in this one.
As long as we're discussing rules, let's briefly go over them for the two or three listeners who don't already know what's going on. Basically, you have 15 players on either side of the court, a standard NCAA basketball court, 94 by 50. The 30 feet close to the baseline of the ends of the basketball court can only be entered by the team on that side. The area in the middle, the remaining 34 feet, both teams can enter at any time. Action can get very chaotic very quickly. 10 dodgeballs on the court. Ref blows the whistle. Everyone charges forward, brings those balls to the back line quick as they can. From there, anything goes. Headshots are legal.
Yeah, it's the headshot really the most exciting, probably the most exciting point in dodgeball. It's a rare thing. You don't see as many of them as you think you'd would. But when you see one, always is it a big deal?
Well, a standard strategy is to aim at places that the player can't usually grab. The fact of the matter is if you see a ball coming anywhere near your face, most people, if they know what they're doing, are going to get their hands up just as a reflex to hopefully get it out of the way. Typically, you'll see sounder teams aim at the knees, aim at the legs, or occasionally, if a player is known to be good at catching opponent's throws, they'll intentionally throw outside, but close enough that the player tries to make a grab for it and ends up bobbling it off their fingers.
You know, it's a play to, to the player's aggressive nature, really, to go just outside of what you think he's capable of catching and hope he makes a play on it and misses the catch.
Well, I don't want to use the phrase just a bit outside, but the fact of the matter is that is usually how you're going to get some of those better players down.
It's going to be interesting to see how teams attack. It looks like Platteville early has really surprising the Hilltoppers. This could be a big upset here early for Western.
Yep, it would be very interesting to find out what's going on in the Hilltoppers' minds right now. I cannot imagine that this is how they plan to start their weekend.
I can run and see if I can grab Josh Raymer here if he's in any mood to talk. He might not be, and it wouldn't surprise me if he wasn't. I'll go check.
All right. folks, this might be a good time to go grab some popcorn, maybe a couple beers. Fact of the matter is, there won't be much conversation today. Or at least right now.
What?
Scoreboard's on.
It's not working?
That one isn't. So using this one.
That should be stopped. None of them right now. It's just general.
All right, sports fans, we are back live at the Average Joe's desk. I talked to Josh Raymer and Felix Peroni. Said the kids don't have their heads on early. Mr. Heichelbeck, you want to add anything? Alex Heichelbeck, infamous as co-host of the Average Joe's podcast, in his war paint today, covered in what looks like sweat, maybe glitter.
A lot of sweat. Same thing Weston always does, first point, right on, just downhill from there.
Well, we'll see if they can turn that around here in the second half of this one. Going to have a little bit of a struggle. Clock situation on court two, still in a bit of doubt. Anyway, Mr. Bowman, what you were saying?
Oh, well, I was just saying that we do have some technical difficulties, but the fact of the matter is the tournament as a whole already seems to be a pretty good success. No real disputes, no real arguments, just some clean, solid, fundamental dodgeball going on all over the place.
Yeah, the game in front of us really turned out to be interesting. The Redhawks pick up a point. What I believe might be their first point ever won at a national tournament as they head into the half here.
Well, I don't know what to tell you about Miami. I've yet to see them play a full game. I've yet to see any of their players aside from Tommy Boyd, aside from this event. Fact of the matter is, I hate to sound negative, but if they pull off a victory or two, it should come as a major surprise.
Yeah, they're playing, I believe, a couple of men down. It looks like they're only playing maybe 9-10 guys. So, you know, to win a point over an established program like DePaul, well, like, you know, the program with some prestige around the name.
The fact of the matter is, it might be that DePaul is just a little too fast for their own good.
Certainly could affect play. You know, if you get ahead of yourself, don't start playing with your head on a swivel. Because, I mean, let's face it, dodgeball game's a vicious cockfight. It's a madhouse out there.
I don't know if necessarily go with the word cockfight, but it certainly is fairly aggressive, fairly chaotic, and if you're not paying attention, can do some serious damage.
You got to keep your head on the swivel. Yes. And that's what Raymer said that Western didn't seem to be doing early. Hopefully they can turn that around.
Well, as we're early in the second half for Western Kentucky, Wisconsin Platteville, I see all 15, no, I see 13 Platteville players versus about, I want to say 10 Hilltoppers left on the other side of the court. So it looks like Platteville may hold on to that advantage.
It's not looking good for the Hilltoppers. They don't seem to be playing with their heads on. See if we can grab Jack Young here for a halftime interview. The Jack Attack, as he is now the captain of DePaul. Jack Young joining us at the Average Joe Sports Desk. Jack, you got to get in close to the microphone here. How do you feel about the way the team's playing so far?
We got a little lackadaisical in that last point. We subbed out some guys who had stronger arms for some more inexperienced guys. But we were looking good until we went. We were up 10 guys to one, and we just got lackadaisical on team throws. You drop points every now and again, but we're having a really good time. These Miami guys are great. They're a lot of fun. So
what is it that Miami's doing that's been managing to frustrate you, and how do you plan to adjust in the second half?
We're probably going to adjust. We were talking about just team throws. We need people to start throwing together more. And catches win games. And we had two catches that entire game. And I've been telling people the whole game, you probably hear me screaming out there, that I don't want my guys keying in on people. I'm seeing too many people just look right at somebody 5 seconds and throwing, and they know where it's coming from, they know where it's at. We're playing really well, though. I'm really happy with how we're playing. So.
All right, thanks, Jack. Appreciate it. Jack Young, the Jack Attack, captain of DePaul, giving us a little halftime interview. Going to see if they can turn around the lack of catching. Seems to be what is also frustrating the Hilltoppers right now.
22 minutes and 30 seconds left in the second half. Platteville still leads 2-1, and I believe they're leading in man advantage by one or two. It looks like 13-11.
Let's hope the Hilltoppers, at least I hope personally, they can turn it around here. It's going to be interesting to see if they alter their strategy if they don't pick up a win here. You know, if they're a team that's relying on a win in order to get a competitive seed tomorrow, but they don't want to play too hard and throw their arms out. Maybe this was, you know, what they were going to hope would be the game that they'd maybe they'd get out of easy, and then they could kind of take the rest of the day off. Now they got to play a Michigan State team that is loaded with talent, and then the Grand Valley War Machine later in the afternoon.
Yeah, meanwhile, on number 42 for Wisconsin, Platteville mishandles a catch. He's going to take a seat on the sideline. About 21 minutes, 30 seconds left in the second half. Platteville still leads, takes down a Hilltopper in the corner. And in the meantime, you have to wonder if this court is going to start working against the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers in the fact that these nets do not allow for any rebounds. Any balls that travel past the opponents are just going to stop dead in their tracks. So you wonder how long their arms are going to be able to hold out if they're not getting balls back that miss their opponents.
You know, I certainly think that is interesting. You're not going to get any rollback. You're going to get a kind of a battle lines kind of being drawn where it's just going to be volley after volley. You know, you're not going to get the kind of fast-paced, hectic sort of dodgeball I think Western usually plays.
Meanwhile, Western Platteville throwing a series of uncoordinated throws, but the disorganized chaos seems to work, because I'm seeing one, possibly two Hilltoppers off to the sideline. I'm counting a total of 7 Hilltoppers left and approximately 10 Platteville players.
So Western keeping it competitive, but really, you know, not staying in it, I think, as close as they want to, and they can't really afford to go down another point here.
Some solid blocking by Western Kentucky as the Hilltoppers start charging Platteville. Manages to take out 1 in the foot, 2 in the feet, and it could be the start of a momentum shift for Western Kentucky.
Dodgeball certainly a game of momentum. The Hilltoppers pick up another big kill.
And a catch besides. This could be the boost that they needed.
They really could be turning this one around.
Meanwhile, 20 minutes left in the second half. Wisconsin Platteville leads the Hilltoppers 2-1.
So we're about to get back into live action on court 2 with the DePaul Blue Demons. I'm not actually sure what the score is. I know that... Score is DePaul 2, Miami 1. Thanks, man.
Skydive a lot?
I haven't yet, but I know the guy that owns that. He gave me the bumper sticker, and I'm going this summer. Skydive Kentucky, everybody. If you're in Kentucky, you want to go skydiving, it's the way to go.
I'll have to take your word for it, Zach. The fact of the matter is my life insurance policy does not cover it.
That's perfectly, perfectly reasonable. I don't blame them at all for not covering jumping out of an airplane at 20-something thousand feet. Not even that high. That's way too high. I don't know why I said that number. Back to live action.
Moving our attention back to court one, you've got 4 or 5 Platteville players, and I'm counting 4 Kentucky Hilltoppers left. This could be the decisive point and the momentum shift in the second half of this game.
Looks like Western has a couple of their big arms. Nick Nyman from Colorado. He's probably one of the gems of Raymer's recruiting during his tenure as captain. They call him the Buffalo. He's just big, mean. He's got a beard.
And number 11 for Western Kentucky just barely mishandles a catch. It pops up. He doesn't see it. It bounces right in front of
him.
Wow. And a catch from point blank range by number 13 for Wisconsin Platteville.
That was Nick Nyman. They needed to keep him in the game. Looks like they've still got Josh Wiseman. Really one of the better all-around players at Western. Great hands. Pretty good arm. You know, not really the rocket that you see a lot of guys have, but certainly, and it looks like we're going to lose our view here. A couple of the DePaul guys. Looks like Crouch. Oh, they're about to get going, I think, on this court, so they shouldn't be fine.
In the meantime, it looks like Western Kentucky's forcing the issue. They're moving past half court slowly, but definitely securing most of the court.
excellent team throw by the Hilltoppers there. Didn't yield any results, but certainly.
Just some active Tyler, dodging on both sides.
Tyler Jury and Josh Wiseman with some great dodges there to avoid the onslaught. And it looks like actually Wiseman going to be called out. Another kill for Luke Gillum, the slippery fish from Russellville, Kentucky.
I'm counting 3-on-5 Hilltopper advantage. Hilltopper throws blocked by number 44 for Western Wisconsin Platteville.
Luke Gillum could be a big asset late in this one. He's known for his sideline play, an excellent excellent assassin. Jake Ryle doesn't really have the arm per se, but he's certainly one of the very effective dodger for this Hilltopper team. Excellent dodge, very quick on his feet, makes pretty good catches.
And number 14 for Wisconsin Platteville goes out, was not paying attention in the far corner. Hilltopper throws 30-foot shot, out he goes. You are down to two Platteville players and a number of Hilltoppers.
Oh! I believe we had a headshot there. I believe the headshot actually came before the catch. Doesn't look like they called the headshot. The referees might have missed that one.
Possibly. I thought it was a block, but who knows. Meanwhile, 3 Platteville players. I am counting 3 Hilltoppers. Most of the balls are on the side of Wisconsin Platteville. Cross-court throw by Kentucky gets caught by number 24 for Platteville. Platteville with 4. Hilltoppers with 2. No, scratch that. Hilltoppers with 4 as well.
Tyler Jury going to the deck. If you've seen the Western U of L game recap, hit the deck. Something the Hilltoppers must do in practice, because I believe the 7th point of that one, they all hit the floor on the first Louisville team throw. It's a sight to see, to watch 15 grown men hit the floor all at once. And Tyler Jury taking advantage of that part of his skill set there to make a dodge.
In the meantime, you've got 3
Jake Ryle going into the stands to make a play.
I'm mildly confused why he wasn't called out for running out of bounds.
Well, I believe that where the bleachers are over there, there's not a lot of space.
Oh, so he might have gotten a foot down. Okay.
He might have kept a foot in.
Platteville player goes out. You are down to...
Looks like 3.
Nope, 4.
4 Pioneers. Actually, no, it is 3.
Yep,
I believe 3 Pioneers 51. Left.
Yeah, 51 for Platteville just went to the outline.
Where's Miami?
Goes out as well. You're down to 2 Platteville players.
Tyler Jury drops a rocket.
And Bedford, number 42 for Platteville, goes down. You're down to 1 Platteville player looking for a catch. Meanwhile, you've got 4 Hilltoppers remaining.
Tyler Jury keeps a foot in. Western is going to get the point. It's going to be a 2-2 tie with a 15 and change left in the second half. This one's going to turn into a barn burn.
Yep. Definitely promising for Wisconsin Platteville, having never really played a competitive game at this level. Meanwhile, Western Kentucky has got to be wondering what's going on. This is definitely not the performance they expected heading into this event.
Well, you know, I believe Josh Raymer talked about they didn't seem like they were awake in that first half. You know, it's early. You know, I mean, by Western standards, it's 9:45 right now. You know, they were up at 7 this morning Central Time, and they might not have adjusted the time change. It's one of those things you got to adapt to when you play on the national stage. Beautiful team catch by DePaul to pick up an extra man advantage. They've got the Redhawks on court 2, down to 2 men. And Jack Young, the captain for DePaul, looking for a ball. Not getting one, but looking for one. He is a big, imposing man out there on the dodgeball court. He's probably standing at least 6'4", 6'5", maybe. He is not a small individual.
Yeah, meanwhile, looking at the score for the DePaul Blue Demons Miami Ohio game, DePaul currently trailing 2-1.
Well, DePaul's up 2-1. Miami's trailing.
No, it's the other way around. Miami is beating DePaul 2-1. Meanwhile, Redhawks down to 2 players. DePaul with, I believe, 9 left on the court. Balls are definitely on the side of Miami Ohio. A couple quick throws at number 25 for DePaul, both blocked.
You know, the blocking position, probably one of the most, undiscussed in dodgeball. You know, you talk about people with big arms, you talk about people that make catches. But a lot of the setup work for those catches are the blockers that knock balls up into the air with the other balls.
And one hit grazes the head of number, I believe, 14 from Miami, Ohio. which leaves one Red Hawk left. He's staying in the far corner, makes a throw at number one for DePaul. Number one for DePaul just barely gets out of the way, makes another isolated throw. Three demons throw right at him, all miss within inches.
You know, it looks like DePaul's lacking that killer instinct, that finish. Let's see. And the kid from Miami's got an arm, and he's not afraid to use it either.
Couple of blocks, definitely got some air on that one. It'd be very unfortunate if that got someone in the chest or face. Meanwhile, I see, I believe, six dodgeballs on the side of Miami, Ohio. Miami, Ohio player charging up to the opposing team's neutral zone line, throws, misses, trails back to the sideline. Demons try and force the issue. They slowly advance.
Playing very fundamental dodgeball is the remaining Red Hawk, trying to stay alive in this one.
Demons throw their only two balls. Red Hawk blocks both, starts moving forward, one in each hand.
He's actually got three. He's got two in his non-throwing hand.
One misses down the far sideline. Another cross-court shot, also a miss, goes into DePaul's outline. Red Hawk starts backing up. Demons start moving forward, getting ready to take him out. Two throws at the same time, both cross in front of each other, missing him by about a foot and a half.
Yeah, it's real close down there. That could be the one. That could be trouble. Oh, and the DePaul player wastes a great opportunity.
Yeah, both players miss from about 10 feet out. A shot bounces off a DePaul player's face, hits number 14 for DePaul in the back, hits the original DePaul player right in the head, and eventually rolls to the ground.
He's looking a little squirrely right now. Kind of wobbling, got a limp going. You know, the headshot is it's serious business in college dodgeball.
Well, the fact of the matter is, a lot of these players can throw in excess of 60 miles an hour. And the last Red Hawk goes down. DePaul ties it up. We have approximately 18 minutes left in the second half.
Scoreboard's not in a good spot.
Scoreboard is tied 2-2.
It's going to be the court one and two games shaping up to be interesting. I'm going to grab a score update here from the other two courts, see what we got going on down the way. From what I can tell, folks, I didn't get the time updates. I forgot. I was just trying to check scores and get back real quick. It looked like a pretty ugly sort of affairs on both court 3 and 4. Saginaw Valley up 5-0 at this point over the Kent State Golden Flashes, and Bowling Green leads Eastern Michigan 4-0.
Well, depending upon the time left in the second half, that might be an advantage for Kent State. As we reported earlier, Kent State was down 4-0 to Saginaw Valley with about 9 minutes left in the first, and I believe they're already in the second half, so it sounds like they're doing better on the defensive front.
Either that or maybe Saginaw also not being as aggressive now that they've got this one pretty well in hand.
Meanwhile, you have almost a late game collapse by Wisconsin-Platteville. I'm counting only 5 Platteville players left. Meanwhile, almost the entire complement of Western Kentucky Hilltoppers are left on the court.
I believe one Hilltopper just made a catch. Couldn't see quite who it was. It was certainly an excellent play. The referee takes a shot there.
Platteville player goes down. You have 3 Platteville players left. 9:29 left in the second half. Score is tied. So either they're going to have to just basically concede this one or try and cut it out for the remaining 10 minutes.
That was Bill Banks that got the big kill for the Hilltoppers there. He's He's a big guy. He's built like a Mack truck hauling a two-ton trailer, and he's got those big Maori warrior-looking gauges in his ears. Just a real intimidating sort of guy.
You've got three Platteville players left, evenly dispersed on their own back line, and Platteville player number six manages to take out number four for
Bill,
Western.
That's
Kentucky.
Bill Banks going down there. Is he not on there? He might not be on the roster. He's there. He's a big guy, but he. Certainly not a...
One good sign for Western Kentucky, when Banks got hit and that ball got popped up, you saw about three or four different players immediately look to the sky to see where that ball was, attempt to grab a team catch, keep him in, and get one of their teammates back in on
looked
the
like
action.
It really looked like that what Raymer talked about in the interview at the halftime about them not going for catches, not playing... And Western just takes another one. I believe Felix Peroni, number 76, the assistant captain in waiting of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. He takes over the reins of the program next year, gets the kill to put them up 3-2 with about eight minutes and 17 seconds in the second half.
Yep, here's gut check time. 8 minutes is definitely enough time to score a point. However, you cannot afford to get into a hole early. If this starts turning into 15 Hilltoppers and 10 Wisconsin Platteville players, or 12-7, or even to be around 10-6, this one could get over quickly.
Yeah, if Platteville can't, if they can't at least stay competitive throughout this point, then this could, and they can't afford to have this point drag out either. If they've got to win it and win it quick, because you've got to have another one, because Western is a team with a lot of overtime experience. And you do not want to put them in a pressure situation like that, because they do great things in overtimes.
And this comes down to coaching. You have 8.5 minutes. Can you stay in there defensively and gut it out for that amount of time? Or are your players going to continue to throw inadvisedly and start putting yourself on the bad end of the momentum shift?
Yeah, you've got to stay aggressive, but you've got to stay smart late in games. That's something that game experience and the lack of it that Platteville currently has, it could hurt them.
Well, court setup definitely will aid the Hilltoppers in this. It's not a situation where you can keep throwing and get rebounds. You just keep the ammo going and continue to pound upon your opponent. The fact of the matter is, I think the Hilltoppers are going to pull this one out.
Meanwhile, over on court two, Miami making another big catch. And the ball player really not making a smart play there, going down on basically a chest pass from the Miami player.
And you've got five Blue Demons left, and you've got two Miami Redhawks left, both with balls all the way as far advanced as they can go. Both throw in the far corner, both miss. DePaul only with those two dodgeballs start passing to the teammates, and we're seeing a slowdown in the action here.
Yeah, the inevitable slowdown late in the game where people are... you know, fighting for scraps at the table, just trying to stay in, maybe make a catch here and there, but they don't want to be too aggressive. But I think the thing about Miami that I've noticed is that even late in games, like right now, you know, they only have two guys left, and they are certainly fighting even with just two men left.
Meanwhile, a really solid dodge by number 35 for DePaul Newer. Manages to just get out of the way of pretty much anything the Redhawks are throwing at him. As far as the slowdown in action, almost inexcusable when it's a one-off game and you don't have anything to worry about. But in a situation like this, where you know you're playing at least another three games, slowdowns like those are acceptable. Meanwhile, quick throw by a Redhawk number 55 takes out three for DePaul.
Moving back over to court one, looks like 6 minutes, so we're already 2 minutes deep in this point. It looks like it is right at, I believe, 13-13 in this one. I can only see three Hilltoppers, 12. The Hilltoppers might have down as low as 12. I can't quite tell. The Platteville line is right in front of the Western bench.
And I'm seeing about 10 Platteville players left. Nice throw down the sideline by number 11. Unfortunately, curved at him just before it went to his target. No hit.
You know, that's the, I guess, kind of the blessing and the curse of the ability to throw the grippy. It's a great throw. You can throw it hard, and it's got that wicked spin, but that spin can cost you hits when the ball curves away from your opponent as it trails off.
Yep. Meanwhile, going back to court two, reversal of fortune for the Blue Demons. We've now got two Blue Demons left, three Redhawks. Redhawk makes a catch, and you're going to see number 55.
Wow, that is a big swing. Sorry to cut you off, but DePaul player made a catch.
An comes number 33, I believe, Hoffman.
This is an excellent game of fundamental
dodgeball. Holtzman. Wow, 2-on-2, fairly even distribution of balls. Teams starting to advance toward midcourt at the same time. Both throw at Tommy Boyd, number 4 from Miami of Ohio, gets taken out by a shot to the foot.
Well, here they go, DePaul, team throwing.
Yep, 33 and 17, throw, caught by number 17. We've got two Red Hawks, one Blue Demon, and that Blue Demon would be number 33, Holtzman.
Holtzman got to play with his head on here. It's important. Dodgeball, really mental game. You know, he's got to play with his head on. He's got to play smart.
Number 14 tries to pick him off. Misses from about 10 feet. The other one's blocked by Holtzman.
And Holtzman.
Holtzman throws at number 14 from Miami of Ohio. Miami catches the ball, putting them up one more point.
No score update over here because nobody is running the scoreboard. It's 3-2, I feel like.
Jack, what's the score?
Jack Young, what's the score?
42. You were down.
Thank you.
So yeah, one home and then one guest, and you had to Alex Bowman was doing double duty, co-hosting the Average Joe's live podcast, also running the scoreboard for court two. Oh, hold on a second.
Well, they say I get double pay for every job I do. Unfortunately, that pay rate is $0 an hour.
Yeah, we don't make a dime for doing this, folks. We do it out of the love of the game. So anyway, I guess I can take over scoring duties here. Pretty easy job.
Meanwhile, 3 minutes and change left in the second half at court one. Wisconsin Platteville trails Western Kentucky 3-2. Looks like about 6 players left on each side, fairly even distribution of balls. This is really the point where Wisconsin Platteville has to charge and start becoming a bit more mindless on the offense. They cannot afford to sit back. And this is where coaching and practicing and more experienced teams are going to recognize that and pull games like this out.
So the clock is running on court two. 9 minutes and 32 seconds in this one, and DePaul is up 4-2. Red Hawks making a late surge, but will it be enough? Looks like we got something going on over here on court one, but I can't see exactly what is occurring. Bones, do you have any insights as to what might be happening here?
Not a clue. I've got the same view as yours, either a player dispute or some question about the officiating. Meanwhile, 2 minutes 47 seconds left in the game reset. Platteville trails 3-2. I am seeing 5 players for Platteville, and I believe 7 left for Western Kentucky. Let's see if they start getting more aggressive here.
Now, what are the policies? Let's say this one, let's say Platteville picks up this point. It looks like they are right there together. What are the rules for determining how we break this tie?
Well, if there is overtime, at that point, a 10-minute overtime session is played. If a point's scored, that's the end of it. You have your sudden death winner. If no point is scored, you go to a number of men left, and at that point, if you're still tied, you go to your second overtime. Rinse, dry, repeat.
Rinse, dry, repeat. Luke Gillum there making the... Making it. What a dodge by number 17 from Platteville, doing the splits up over a ball there.
17 got about 24 inches of air, and he needed every last one of them to make sure he could still parent children after that one. And 17 then throws a quick cross court shot, takes out another Hilltopper.
Actually, I believe that one might have been, Josh Wiseman, I believe, got a block on that one.
6 Hilltoppers left, 4 Platteville players left. You have 1 minute, 45 seconds. Hilltoppers lead 3-2.
Yeah, this one, the Hilltoppers look like they're going to play slow and steady, wins the race here. They're going to try to turtle this one out hold on to win, I believe.
Well, it's not so much what Western Kentucky is doing right now as what Wisconsin Platteville is not doing. They have a dodgeball. There's no reason for them not to throw it.
They have balls, they've got to be aggressive. They're letting Western really sit on the lead, if you will.
We have a minute 15 left. You have 3 Wisconsin Platteville players left playing against about 6, maybe 7 Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. A couple of quick throws by the Platteville players. and number 42, Pfeffer, gets hit in retaliation.
It's certainly the game swinging late in Western's favor. Excuse me, Jake Ryle and Adam Martin on the front line there. I believe Nick Nyman takes down another one, and Western picks up what will probably be the dagger in the Platteville heart in this one. 48 seconds left, they take a 4-2 lead.
Well, it's a very good effort by Wisconsin-Platteville, especially a team that really doesn't have much gameplay experience against other teams. When you play the same people over and over and over again, you start to learn their tendencies, and whether you intend to or not, that starts to become part of your play set. So when you start playing teams that you don't know and you don't know their tendencies, you tend to be out of your comfort zone. That might be what's at play here. In any event, solid effort by Western Kentucky to come back in the second half and take care of business.
Yeah, definitely finished the way that they've been playing all year. Let's see how they go out in game two. I believe their game two comes up. They don't play again until, I believe, 1:45.
Western Kentucky, no. They play powerhouse Grand Valley State University in a few hours. Meanwhile, Wisconsin-Platteville has their turn against the Lakers immediately following this game.
It's going to be tough to have to play Western Kentucky and then now to take on the Grand Valley team, go from the number two team to the number one team in the country.
Well, assuming that Grand Valley gets out to an early lead, it then becomes a battle to maintain your seeding. As stated earlier, seeding on Sunday in the 13-team single elimination bracket is based on your win-loss record, and then if there are still teams with the same record, you then go to the points fielded minus points against. So the question is, will Wisconsin-Platteville just be willing to run up the score in the off chance of a win, or will they try and hold back to avoid that differential from becoming too great?
Certainly an interesting question. Western really breaking out the shenanigans in this one. Jake Ryle, the tiny titan of Western, playing a T-Rex point, I believe it's called, where your arms are halfway in your jersey. And that'll do it for the first game of the National Collegiate Dodgeball Association National Tournament. The Western Kentucky Hilltoppers 4, the Wisconsin Platteville Pioneers 2.
Heading back to court 2 for a moment, you have just under 5 minutes to play. DePaul continues to lead over the Miami of Ohio Redhawks. You have two Redhawks left on the court facing, I believe, seven
slew of Blue Demons. Just more than you want to see when you're down late in the game.
Yep, one Redhawk left, and it's the one with the arm, number 11 for Miami of Ohio. Couple isolated throws by the Blue Demons on the far sideline. Nothing good. Miami Ohio starts running back at him. Tries to hit someone standing in the paint. Misses by about a foot. However, the other throw he makes down the sideline manages to take out a player for DePaul. But still, you have six players for DePaul University facing off against one Redhawk.
You hear the strains of Stand Up and Cheer, the Western fight song. They break into the strains of that after the victory in the first game of pool play. Meanwhile, back on court two, Redhawk putting up a fight.
Takes down number 25 for DePaul, and you're left with, I believe, five DePaul Blue Demons left on the court. One Redhawk, number 11, trying to do anything can to muscle those throws home.
Yeah, Miami playing great late in points. No quit in this team at all. You know, these kids are way down, and they're still playing hard.
A couple isolated throws from DePaul University, both missed. Look to be about head level, so it's clear they want to end this last point with a statement.
They really put an exclamation point on this one. Captain Young requesting a ball to Jack Attack, moving in, running up.
All throws miss. Slow down in the action. Meanwhile, you have just under 3 minutes left in the game. Miami, Ohio trails. A couple isolated throws back and forth just seemed to be a quick, gentlemanly way to round this one out.
See, we'll grab Josh Raymer here post-game. Get an interview with him. Jake Ryle, saw you play the T-Rex point. What inspired that kind of behavior?
Oh, man. Tell you what, we got down to that last point. I figured we had to do something crazy, man. Got to do something that we can be remembered by. And dinosaur point, classy choice.
Yeah,
dinosaur
excellent
point.
Choice.
Bill Banks? Is a beast.
Bill Banks is a grown man. We'll,
good job, guys.
See if we can grab Josh Raymer here. Meanwhile, just entering the Prairie Field House, some attractive ladies from Michigan State. Not really pertaining to dodgeball. Just thought I'd let you guys know what you're missing out on by not being in on the festivities this weekend.
Michigan State University. Over 150 years of advancing knowledge, transforming lives.
There you go. Josh Raymer, can we grab you for a post-game interview? I'm going to hold just a second on that one, which is pretty convenient because we got about 2 minutes left, and wow! I'm sure you folks heard the impact of that one. That was a rocket fired by number 11 from Miami. Do we have a roster? We do not have a roster. Unfortunate. Like a rocketized animal, he just hurled that one across the way here to right in front of the broadcast booth.
Hey, Adam!
Quick throw by the Miami of Ohio player to midcourt. Ends up about a foot short of Jack Young. Miami of Ohio player starts moving to midcourt. DePaul Blue Demons start backing up. They've got five left on the court. Throw by a lone DePaul Blue Demon Thomas.
Wow.
Thomas avoids what looked to be about a 60-65 mile an hour throw. Jack Young almost caught unaware. Starts charging the Miami Redhawk down. Ends up taking a breather. Quick throw at head level. Barely misses the Redhawk, number 11.
It is 4-2 with 1 minute left in dodgeball action.
Paul Blue Demon throws again about a foot or two off. Number 11 from Miami, Ohio picks up a couple dodgeballs, starts moving forward. Blue Demons with no dodgeballs start backing up. Quick throw at Jackson Young, no good.
The Western Kentucky Hilltoppers 4, the Wisconsin Platte Eagles.
Yeah. Red Hawk starts backing up. He's at the baseline. DePaul Blue Demons have a pair of dodgeballs. Jack attack. Jack Young being one of them. Looking to coordinate a throw in the remaining 23 seconds left in this game. Will DePaul get that extra point?
Point could be very helpful here in this one.
Yes. Every point counts in this tournament, ladies and gentlemen, as the point differential could determine whether you get a 5 seed or a 6 seed or anything in between.
Josh Raymer joining us at the Average Joe Sports Desk. Raymer, how do you feel about the way your team played the second half?
The second half,
we were yowza,
much improved, a lot more aggressive, and a lot of group throws and some good catches. So much, much better performance second half, no doubt.
What do you think? What are you expecting out of game two? You got a couple hours off here. What's the plan for the kids?
Second game, we're just going to really focus on catches, try to save our arms for Sunday. Grand Valley's a good team and probably take a lot out of us to try to beat them. So we're going to try to, you know, have some catching practice, have some fun with those guys.
There you go. Josh Raymer, captain of Bowling Green's Western Kentucky University Hilltoppers. Bowling Green, Kentucky, the real Bowling Green.
Pleasure, Newton.
It's always a pleasure, Mr. Raymer. Mr. Heigelbeck, your face paint is silly. Your work is impressive. What'd you do out there? Your jersey is a mess.
Is that a Martin? Basically, blocker. Spend the majority of time just funneling balls to the big arms. Making blocks when I could, but I mean, Adam Martin pretty much has that down. I think I'm kind of out there as a mascot, puffy, kind of misshapen.
Fair.
I'm really what we need, a mascot.
You know, I certainly agree with you. Puffy, kind of misshapen, really an excellent description of one Alex Heigelbeck.
Keep on trucking, man.
Oh, we will. We will. We will. So early in the title hunt here, Western picks up a big win, as does as do.
Did you watch that?
Yeah, I saw
the decimation.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
For the far court.
As for Josh Wiseman here, Wiseman, you want to join me in the Average Joe's desk here, a little post game interview?
I will here in a minute. I have to go ref a game right now. I'll be back.
Josh Wiseman has to ref a game. You know, that's something great about dodgeball. We don't have the money to pay refs. We can't do that. So what do we do?
Bubba da boo doo.
Thank you, Kyle Dahl. Everybody, Kyle Dahl is the reason we left late yesterday. He was supposed to ride in team in one of the Western cars. He didn't. Daniel Williams, congrats on the big win for the Hilltoppers.
Hey, man, I just want to have fun winning for the second half.
There you go. Daniel Williams, Western player.
Is this live?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It'll be on iTunes later. If you're listening at home, you already know this is on iTunes. But once again, this is the Average Joe's podcast. We are live from Bowling Green, Ohio. Here in between pool play games, we're heading into our second game. Gonna hopefully kick off in about 4 minutes. I believe on court two, I believe we're gonna have the Ohio State Buckeyes and quite possibly, I believe, the DePaul Blue Demons again. Let me check that out. We'll be right back with more live dodgeball action. Actually, we're not gonna go anywhere because Bowman's is back. He's gonna tell you what's. Oh, he's got a schedule. I don't even have to get up and look.
Fact of the matter is, current scores right now, as you know, Western Kentucky defeats Wisconsin Platteville 4-2. DePaul University handles Miami of Ohio 4-2. Bowling Green and Eastern Michigan still battling it out. 12 minutes left in the second half. Bowling Green leads 4-1. Finally, Saginaw Valley State taking care of business and is currently 4 minutes left to play in their game. Saginaw Valley State leads Kent State 6-1.
It's going to be... Kent State picked up a point on Saginaw.
That is correct. Meanwhile, for your action coming up, you have Grand Valley State University versus Wisconsin Platteville, our game which we'll be covering, Ohio State University versus DePaul, Saginaw Valley State versus Eastern Michigan, and finally Kent State versus Western Illinois.
We'll see you right back here on the Average Joe's Podcast.